Good afternoon. Welcome on in to Kildare Focus. It's Wednesday, the 24th of May. You're listening to KFM. It's Caoimhe Harney with you until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we'll be speaking to Gillian Dunn-Minnock. She's from Maynooth. She was diagnosed with a rare condition when she was 18 months old, and her four children now have the ailment. And she'll be telling us all about that. Then we'll be speaking to Stephen Moffat, National Policy Manager at Barnardos. An increasing number of Irish families are suffering from the cost of living crisis. We'll speak to Linda Byrne, chairperson and manager at County Kildare Orchestra. 25th anniversary gala concert will be held in Maynooth, and it's happening this Saturday evening. Then we'll speak to Niamh Delmar. She's a chartered counselling psychologist at the Greystones Health and Wellbeing Centre, and she'll be giving us lots of tips on how to get a good night's sleep. Of course, if you want to get in touch with the show, 045 898 99. Dinfna Murphy is on the phones. If you want to email, it's studio@kfmradio.com, or you can send us a WhatsApp or a text.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, a Maynooth woman who was diagnosed with a rare condition at 18 months old says she wants a better future for her children. Well, I'm joined now on the line by Gillian Dunn-Minnock, and she is, of course, from Maynooth. Good afternoon, Gillian.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe. How are you?
Delighted to have you on, Gillian. Gillian, first tell us about the condition that you have and what it entails.
Well, neurofibromatosis, or NF, it's a genetic condition, and it's passed down from one parent, say, to a child. A 50-50 chance of passing it on, but it can be spontaneous as well. So it's basically, it affects the nerves in the body anywhere and causes tumours to grow on those nerves, and would affect mobility, deformities, and a lot of other complex medical conditions all in one, like.
Okay, and you've had this since you're 18 months old?
Yeah, well, that's when I was diagnosed.
Okay.
Born with it.
Does it affect people in different ways? Like, we'll get to your children in a minute, because I know that you have four children, all of which have inherited this disease. Does it affect people in different ways, or, you know, can people be worse or better with this?
Yeah, it varies. Each person is completely different to the next. Some people might have facial deformities. Other people might have the tumours inside, and you wouldn't even know by looking at them they had the condition. Some people lose limbs, some people go blind. They have to have chemotherapy for the tumours growing around the body. So it really does vary, and we need a specialist clinic who knows this condition. And at the moment, it's just passing from one doctor who's treating. So say if you're going blind, the doctor, an ophthalmologist will look after you. But like, okay. It's just, there is a number of people in Ireland, but it's just, we're the only...
I was just going to say we can get to that in a moment, Gillian, but I know you're 41 years old. Like I said, you've had NF since you were a child. How has it affected you across your life?
Well, I was a nurse, and I had to give up, get early retirement due to the fact my health was so bad that one day I could be in so much pain I couldn't do anything. I got a heart device fitted, similar to a pacemaker. I've wires in my spine to help with the symptoms related to the NF. Seizures. There's a lot, kind of even to list off all at once.
Okay. It sounds absolutely horrific, Gillian, and fair play to you for being able to continue on. Your four children, twins, then two other children. Talk us through that and your children. And I suppose I know they have this disorder as well, which is not good news for them.
No, it's not. Well, the twins, we kind of picked up on the signs straight away with one of them, my son Paul, and then my daughter. It wasn't diagnosed until she was about five, because the symptoms are different. They have these patches, cafeoles, and that's what we noticed first with my son. But then my daughter, it was like an optic glioma on the back of her eye. That's how she was diagnosed, and plexiforms. on her knee, so she has like sheet tumours on the outside. And then we kind of just talked to our GP. We kind of knew where to go. We knew what it was. And we were basically telling some of the doctors what it was like.
Because they probably weren't as used to seeing it as you were. Your other two children, Raphael, is that how you pronounce the name?
Raphael
and Roman Jean, they also have it too.
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
We noticed with them straight away as well, with the skin, the patches. Raphael has the optic glioma as well, and Roman Jean has a lot of issues with her jaws, because they can grow in along the jaw as well. So they're each completely different to each other.
Okay. Well, I think I can hear the kids in the background there, and it seems like they haven't, it hasn't dampened their spirits anyway, Gillian, which is great news. But NF, it affects 1 in 3,000 people in the US. But shockingly, there's no official registry here in Ireland, so we actually don't know how many people are affected. Is that right?
Yeah. All we know, we can go by, is the numbers that people contact the NF Association of Ireland or the small clinic in Tala Hospital. That's the only way we can keep track, say, for the committee. I'm part of the committee, so it's that's our only way. Like, at the moment, they're supposed to be doing a registry, but it'll take time.
Okay. There's no timeline on when this registry will be up and running, is there?
No, none at all.
What are you calling for then, Gillian? You want a registry. You want dedicated clinics too.
Yeah, like one clinic. We have a small clinic, like I said, in Tala, but it doesn't even have all the equipment to deal with the patients. Like, for one thing, with the optic glioma, that's massive. The back of your eyes have to be checked, and we don't. They don't have an OCT machine, is what it's called. But yeah, you can go to Specsavers and get the test done for 15 or 25 euro. And now the association, they offer to pay, but then they need the staff to run it. They need to know people to read the scans. So it's kind of quite difficult. We're trying to just keep fighting and fighting. We did get our local TD, Raida Cronin, to put in questions into the Dáil about NF, about the future of the clinic. Will there be one in the hospital? And then I know a few other TDs from different parties asked the same questions, but we're kind of just getting the same non-conclusive answer.
Falling on deaf ears there for you. In other countries, Gillian, I'm not sure if you know, in other European countries, is it better? Do they have dedicated clinics? Are we the outliers?
Yeah, they have numerous clinics across Europe. In the UK, they have a number in each part of the UK, and people have to travel abroad from here, from Ireland. They go over to, say, Italy or Spain or the UK to get further treatment done, because it's not being offered here as quick.
Have you ever travelled for treatment, Gillian?
Yeah, I went up the north to the independent hospital up there to get the wires done on my spine. It wasn't done down here at the time, and I was the first female to get it done up there. Like, but it was a lot of hassle. Like, even I could have flown up, but there was around the time of, you know, the Icelandic, that ash cloud, we had to drive up and up and down, so it wasn't really feasible.
It's hard enough that you have this, Gillian, yourself, but to watch your four children go through the same thing, I'm not a parent, but I imagine, leaving yourself aside, you want this changed for the sake of your kids and going into the future.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I don't want my children to think pain is normal, which it's not. So it's, they've ordered, like, epilepsy can be a sign as well of NF because of the growth of certain tumours and lesions. And it's just, I want them to have a place where they're looked after then, even when past they're 16, because then I know the children's hospital, once it's 16, they discharge you, and there's no doctors to look after them then after that age.
Okay. Gillian, four children, I think, anyway, is a very hard thing to have. But when you are so sick yourself and you four children who are also so sick, how do you manage?
Well, my husband's an incredible support. He's fantastic. He's my full-time carer. because like that there's day to days where I could be in pain, I couldn't do a thing, like, and then other days I could be fine. But it's important to have, I suppose, good support. Like we, I suppose, Rare Ireland, I'm not sure if you've heard them, they kind of work in with NF Ireland, and we have support like that from our own members. Or if a friend, say my friend, a good friend of mine, he's a lot of medical conditions as well, so he understands. He's not in the same boat. We're complete. They're two, like, our medical issues are completely different, but support a friend, I suppose, is massive as well.
Okay, it's brilliant that you have such a supportive husband and friends there, which is great, Gillian. I suppose a final message to any Kildare TDs listening in, senators, councillors, what would you like to say to them in order to maybe progress some better services for NF?
Just to speak up and help us get legitimate answers that are going to help not just me, but the other children in Ireland,
okay.
Basically.
Okay, well, listen, I know you're campaigning for, you know, better services, including a 24-hour helpline, literature,
yeah,
about the condition, a genetic counselling service and other information. Gillian, I have to say you are inspirational to listen to, and we wish you the best of luck on your campaign, and we'll continue to support you here in KFM. If any of the TDs in Kildare are listening in, of course, we hope that they can progress this further for you. That is Gillian Dunn-Minnock from Maynooth, and telling us there about the condition that she has, NF, and her four children have also inherited the ailment. Thanks very much, Gillian, for your time.
Kildare Focus with Caoimhe Harney. Text or WhatsApp 0833 97 97 97.
Now, going to bed at 7pm to keep the lights off and the costs down has unfortunately become a reality for some people in this country. I'm joined now on the line by Stephen Moffat, National Policy Manager at Barnardos. He'll talk to us about the increasing number of Irish families suffering from the cost of living crisis. Good afternoon, Stephen.
Thanks for having me on.
Delighted to have you, Stephen. I mean, this report is quite harrowing. I mean, parents talking about their children having no GAA shoes and having blisters on their feet, and the children not even telling them that because they just know how tight things are within the home.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had the privilege of speaking to 30 parents one-on-one in depth about, you know, the financial struggles they're finding themselves under as a result of cost of living increases. And yeah, the stories that were coming out, you know, were almost over time seem to be the everyday stories. You know, that exactly is what you described, you know, parents who had children who, you know, they're struggling to afford to get them to do extracurricular activities. Some couldn't at all. But, you know, even those who were engaging in, yeah, things like Gaelic or football or other activities, you know, were struggling to keep up with any sort of payments that were involved in them, be it, you know, for footwear, clothing, the cost of getting children to and from those activities. And that was just one element of this, you know. Obviously, real concerns around you know, children accessing essentials like heating, electricity, and going without on an almost daily basis.
37% have had to cut back or go without heating their home in the past 6 months. Huge chunk there. One-fifth have had to cut back on food as the cost of living crisis impacts families. And then, of course, a similar proportion, 23%, had gone without electricity. Coming into the summer, obviously it might not hit you as hard in terms of electricity, like lights and that kind of thing, but still, like, it's really shocking, this report.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the good weather seems to finally be here, but it's only in the last week or so. You know, it's for families who are struggling to pay bills, and they are really struggling to pay bills. Heating and electricity are still up substantially. We know the cost of groceries hasn't come down at all. In fact, there's been huge increases this year. So parents are having to sacrifice to try and pay those bills. Unfortunately, families are getting into arrears. So, you know, the summer might offer some breathing space, you know, where the families can pay off some of those arrears. But we know summers in Ireland don't last particularly long. We'll be back to this stage relatively quickly in which parents are struggling to keep the heating on. We know that's often one of the first things that will go. You know, if parents are making difficult decisions, if they're being put under pressure of what they can and can't afford. And there's real repercussions for children living in, you know, cold, unsuitably heated housing. It's bad for their health, it's bad for their development. And, you know, in a country like Ireland, it just shouldn't be the case that children are having to deal with that.
No, like these stories, Stephen, you're right, in a country like Ireland, there's something that you would imagine were from maybe, you know, 100 years ago. It's hard for people maybe to believe that these are current stories. Another parent said in this report, assumingly you interviewed these people, my birthday the other day, got money from my own family, spent it on dinner for my children. Another person said, this mother uses coal to heat her house. A bag of coal in her local shop has doubled in price, and as a result, she sometimes can't light the fire and she just cannot afford to do it. I suppose, Stephen, like long term, what plans do we need to put in place? Because I know the government have given the once-off measures. From a Barnardo's point of view, does that go far enough, or do we really need to pull the plug and really get thinking on how we can support families for longer?
So I think the measures certainly did help, and parents did repeatedly say how they helped to keep them afloat, helped to get them out of a hole. You know, and they were very much welcome. They gave them a bit of financial respite, but that's all it was. Parents are telling me that their lives have gotten harder, their children's lives have gotten harder. And we really need to step back and think, okay, right, do we think more children and more families' lives should be getting harder at the moment? We need to look at, you know, what measures did work, what we can replicate going forward, and then think about more long-term what our ambitions are for children in this country, that they should be growing up in households that have decent heating, decent electricity, food on the table.
Okay, obviously the budget is coming up, and there was an announcement yesterday by the Taoiseach that the pension will go up. I suppose, what would you like from Barnardo's point of view in the budget?
So absolutely around, you know, social welfare rates will need to increase. We'd like to see them increasing in line with inflation, or certainly in terms of minimum essential standard of living rates. That's really, really important. We want to see other measures. You know, there's immediate measures that could be done or certainly looked at, as well as tackling in the longer term, like access to social activities. You know, that all children should have similar ability to engage with sports and cultural activities. It's unfair that families or children coming from certain areas, you know, are disadvantaged. So that might take the form of, you know, some form of grant or subsidy for children around engaging social activities. We'd like to see, you know, the government tackle the issue of prepaid meters. We don't think it's fair that families on the lowest incomes are paying a premium for trying to do what's right and trying to use prepaid meters because they're frightened that they'll get very high bills. So we want government to look at tackling that, to make sure that those families are put on actually the lowest tariffs. But that might need some form of government subsidy.
Just to come in on you there, Stephen, is that the case? Are people on the pay-as-you-go meters, they are paying the highest tariffs?
Often it is. It's almost at the highest levels. Okay. And parents themselves I spoke to, they're aware of that. So they know that they're going to be paying more for their electricity or heating than they would be on a bill. But they're just too frightened that they'll get in a very high bill that they won't be able to afford, that they'll get into arrears, and that'll have massive repercussions on the ability to afford other items. So we don't think, you know, children in those homes are going with less heat, less electricity, because their parents are paying the premium. And it doesn't seem right for, you know, another family who can well afford higher rates but are getting lower rates because they have to pay for direct debit bills.
Mm, absolutely. I interrupted you there, Stephen, and you were saying what you were calling for within the next budget.
Yes, yeah, so there's definitely other issues that the government needs to look to address. Certainly with heating, price of heating staying very, very high, we know that inflation rates are coming down, but it, you know, in comparison what someone would pay for heating now to a year and a half ago, it's still extremely inflated. So to make sure that parents and children are living in adequately heated homes, government will look to we'll need to look at additional measures or once-off measures potentially in the next budget, along with longer-term, you know, increases, to, as I mentioned, social welfare rates. We would also like to see, you know, there's an additional needs programme that is, you know, a very progressive programme that the country has, where families can go apply for emergency additional funds to pay for certain essentials. Families are waiting long periods of time, often 7-8 weeks to get a decision around that. We need to look at cutting that so when a family does have an emergency payment that they need, that they can get it. So we think there's, you know, there's short-term things the government can do and longer-term things, you know, just to create more aspirational goals for what we'd like children in this country to benefit from.
Okay, Stephen Moffat, National Policy Manager at Barnardos. Thanks very much, Stephen, for joining us. Yeah, the report, it's actually really shocking. There was one example as well. A staff member reported a case in which parents needed to prioritise paying bills and two brothers who played football were unable to continue to play because their club fees were not paid. And that's awful. And you'd really hope. I wonder, are there any, you know, maybe special cases where parents might be able to get the fees waived in clubs or in GA clubs around the county? Let me know, 0833 97 97 97, because it just seems very harsh that children would have to stop playing a sport because their parents can't afford to pay for the fees for the club. And I know people will say, well, that's standard practice, but in this day and age, maybe something could be done. 0833 97 97 97. Thanks very much to Stephen. Now, not great news breaking there in the last few minutes. Meta has announced that around 490 jobs are to be cut at its operations here in Ireland. Facebook's parent company is reorganising the structure of its teams, which is resulting in job cuts globally. So I suppose thoughts with all of the people affected there, because a good chunk, nearly 500 people, losing their jobs there. So not good news, and we're thinking of them here. Now, moving on to something a little different. Niamh Delmar, she's a chartered counselling psychologist at the Greystones Health and Wellbeing Centre, and she's going to give us lots of different tips on how to get a good night's sleep. Good afternoon, Niamh.
Good afternoon.
Niamh, I think there's probably not a person in the world who doesn't want to know how they can get a better sleep, or, you know, what affects sleep. And really a lot of things have an effect on your sleep, don't they, Niamh?
Absolutely. There's physical conditions like pain can affect sleep, and also psychological ones and mental health disorders such as anxiety, depression or bipolar that can really mess around with sleep. But it's also bidirectional. So those disorders can affect sleep, but sleep can also aggravate and bring on disorders like that too.
Okay, there's different stages of sleep, Niamh, that, to be honest, I don't even understand at all. There's the non-rapid eye movement and then there's the rapid eye movement. Is there just two?
Yeah, there's a few stages of sleep because there's different kind of stages within those as well.
Okay.
But basically, what we're aiming at really is getting a deep sleep, which
right.
is the rapid eye movement sleep. So it goes into a deeper sleep. And it's, you know, a lot of times people will say, oh, I only got 3 hours sleep last night, or I only got 5 hours sleep. That doesn't matter. It's the quality and getting the deep sleep rather than the quantity. So somebody, you know, sometimes you might wake up after getting a good night's sleep for hours, 7 hours, and you feel wrecked. So it might have been disrupted. And every time you get it disrupted, it means that you have to go back to square one and try and go into the deep phase again.
Okay.
So, you know, that's what it's about. It's about the quality and the deep sleep phases. We want more of that, not the number of hours.
So how can you ensure that you get a good night's sleep and, you know, you get into that REM stage of sleep? Because sometimes if you get 9 hours sleep, you think, well, great, I went to bed early and blah, 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 blah. You know, how do you mitigate having a bad sleep if you are getting enough sleep?
Yeah. And, you know, things can, you know, really aggravate that. Like, just say if there's a parent with a new baby, well, obviously their sleep is going to constantly get disrupted with feeding and, you know, waking up and that. So that's going to, you know, it's a big problem. And I see it here when people come in, you know, they really have that sleep deprivation. So, you know, it's those things kind of are unfortunately there. So if there's menopause, if there's parents of young babies, they're going to have a lot of problems with trying to do catch-up sleep as much as they can. But otherwise, the first thing really is to assess, is there a disorder? you know, is there something like insomnia? Is there sleep apnea? Is there anxiety or depression? Mm-hmm. You know, we need to try and get a good assessment of what is the aggravating factor for this. You know, obviously, if there's a trauma or there's been grief, you know, sleep will be disrupted. So it's looking at what is the underlying cause of it is the first step.
Okay.
And then looking at the lifestyle factors. How is the lifestyle? What's going on during the day? Is there enough fresh air during the day? Is there enough movement during the day? Enough physical and mental stimulation during the day that can help you wind down into a better sleep? And really, it stays the same for adults as children. We have to have a wind down into sleep. You know, we need, okay, as children, they have their stories told, maybe their bath time. There's a big lead into it. But suddenly we leave that all behind as adults. And again, the big no-no, you know, you want kind of a detox-free environment. You want good, comfortable mattress, right temperature, and that wind-down time before bed. So okay. We get the adrenaline and the cortisol levels down, because you won't sleep with cortisol or adrenaline in your system.
Okay, so try and be as relaxed as possible, which I know in a busy lifestyle, it's not always possible, Niamh, but, you know, people should try their best. Physical activity, of course, the big one there. How is important is exercise then in terms of sleep?
Exercise is hugely important, and movement, because it kind of, you know, tires out the body in a way. But you don't want to be doing a big run before bedtime. It has to be timed well. So the more we can do during daytime and get daylight hours and have a walk around the block or walk up the road during lunchtime or whatever it can be, or a bit of stretches or movement during the day, the better. And then leaving nighttime for kind of winding down. And also what we're ingesting during the day will affect at night. If we're pumping ourselves with sugar and caffeine and eating a big heavy meal at night, everything will affect whether you're going to get into the deep phase, sleep or not, and alcohol.
Absolutely. This time of year, it's very hard, I think, for parents to get their kids down, because children don't understand that it's bright till 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
But equally for ourselves, you know, if you're used to going to bed early, I even find now I would never go to bed early usually, which is bad. But you would tend to try and stay up later because you think, well, like, you know, it's still bright out.
That's it. And people have their barbecues, don't they? And they stay out later and they're maybe having a few drinks out, and all that goes on during the light. And that, again, is, you know, so important to keep the same pattern of sleep, even on days off, that you're going to bed at the same time and you're waking up at the same time, so you get those circadian rhythms nice and evened out. And also knowing your own pattern, because some, you know, that's your chronotype. Some people are morning larks, other people are night owls. So, you know, you're working around that system as well of what suits you best and in accordance with work, what that is, and avoiding those big, huge naps during the day. It's okay to have a power nap. Or again, if it's somebody that, you know, like the parent who can't sleep during the night, they have to kind of get naps whenever they can. But really regulating everything as much as possible and getting those blackout blinds up behind the curtains at night, or putting the, you know, the blind things over your, the iPad things over your eyes to kind of, you know, induce that sleep and create a dark environment can help too.
Okay. The mobile phone then, Niamh, lastly, it's a big no-no for the bedroom, especially if you have trouble sleeping, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it's so easy, isn't it, to just tap into it. And it's kind of, we think it's soothing and everything, whereas it's doing the opposite. Like the blue screen thing, we know the effect on the brain. So it's going to stimulate the brain in the wrong way. And it's the opposite to winding down. So getting into a habit of surrendering the phone, getting the old-fashioned alarm clock out and surrendering the phone outside the bedroom, and having a read or listening to a nice audiobook, and getting into those wind-down bedtime rituals that we know will help us get into that deeper phase of sleep.
Okay, Niamh Delmar, Chartered Counselling Psychologist at the Greystones Health and Wellbeing Centre. Thanks very much, Niamh, for your time. Now, the County Kildare Orchestra is delighted to present their 25th anniversary gala concert in the Aula Maxima at Maynooth University. Well, I'm joined now on the line by Linda Byrne. She's Chairperson and Manager at County Kildare Orchestra. Good afternoon, Linda.
Good afternoon, Caoimhe.
Linda, I'm sure you're very excited. This obviously is happening this weekend, is that right?
That's right, yes. Can't believe we're already 25 years old. But yes, very exciting. Wonderful programme planned for it. We have a guest artist from the RTE Concert Orchestra, Eamon Nolan, and he'll be playing a rarely played trumpet concerto indeed, by Arul Chunian, and this is a virtuoso showpiece, absolutely magnificent, and the orchestra is so excited about playing that. We're also doing some movements from Pictures at an Exhibition. These were all written from to go with various exhibits from an artistic friend of Mussorgsky. Now, some of them have very interesting names. I think my favourite has to be The Hut on Hen's Legs.
Very good.
There's another one called Belly of the Unhatched Chicks. So, yes, interesting names and beautiful pieces of music. But we've a very mixed programme because it's our 25th. You know, we're trying to bring something for everybody. We're playing the beautiful theme from Out of Africa. I'm sure most people will know that. And then we have two other soloists, soprano Emer Barry and tenor Owen Hines. And they're going to perform a beautiful piece of music such as I Dreamt I Dwelt in Marble Halls, a very well-known piece by Michael Ball from his opera The Bohemian Girl. A lovely duet from Phantom of the Opera. Owen, I've heard him sing this many times, is going to sing Nessun Dorma. So a lovely mix of music there. And then we finish with something quite unusual, with Freddie Mercury's We Are the Champions.
Wow.
Because during COVID, we kept the orchestra going by doing virtual performances. So we would send music out to the players, bless them, they would record this themselves individually, and then we'd put it together for a virtual performance online. And as I say, this was composed by Freddie Mercury to bring people together. This was our way of bringing the orchestra together, even though very much apart. And I suppose it's our way now of saying, you know, at the time it was we'd come through this, and now it's here we are. We've come through it, and we just feel it will be a great celebratory piece to finish with.
Absolutely. It sounds like a really good lineup as well, Linda.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is it Saturday that it's taking place, this concert?
So Saturday evening in the Aula Maxima in Maynooth University. It starts at 7:30 and it will last for approximately 2 hours.
Okay, doors open at 6:45. How do people get their hands on tickets?
So they can buy the ticket either online at eventbrite.ie, but we'll also have some tickets available at the door. But to ensure you'll get your ticket, Eventbrite, you'll definitely have your ticket, but we do hope we'll have some tickets left. It's a lovely big venue. We were there last December, actually, for the last of our mini tour with the Shackleton Story, South, always South. So it is a lovely venue, and that's why we thought we'd go back there again.
Okay. Have you been there since the start then, Linda? 25 years?
Yeah. Would you believe my eldest son, he was a teenager at the time, he joined the orchestra. And then the year after that, I didn't go to a meeting and I found myself the new PR of the orchestra.
Wow.
And then some years ago, I stepped into the managerial role. So, yes, they're all like my babies. I'm very proud of the orchestra. And remember, these are all amateur players. They give up a lot of their time. And for a big concert like this, it's very demanding on the players. But they've all given that time, and Saturday night will be the end result, and we know it will be a wonderful night.
Absolutely. Is your son still playing in the orchestra?
No, he's long gone.
Oh,
he's a planetary scientist in America now.
Oh, wow.
I think his violin is under his bed. He doesn't have time to take it out, but he still likes music.
That's brilliant. I actually play the violin myself, but like your son, I have it. I have to blow the dust off it, I think, and get back at it. Linda, thanks so much for coming on with us this afternoon. That's Linda Byrne, chairperson and manager at County Kildare Orchestra. And as she was saying, the 25th anniversary gala concert being held in Aula Maxima at Maynooth University this Saturday evening. Doors open at 6:45. It begins at 7:30 sharp. You can get tickets on eventbrite.ie online. There will be a limited number of tickets at the door. So if you find yourself at a loose end this weekend, maybe head on over to Maynooth.